Hello, TSF family. We wanted to start off by saying thank you. Thank you for listening to this podcast and for your hard work to love yourself more and for your feedback.
Can you believe it's been 3 years that we've been doing this spiritual fix, and it has been such a beautiful labor of love for Anna and me.
We have loved doing this work. We've loved hearing from you, and we love exploring ourselves and each other alongside our listeners.
We wanted to put out the call for 3 ways that you can help support us to support you.
One, we would love you to leave us a review on iTunes or follow us on Spotify.
2, drop us an email and let us know how much the podcast means to you.
And 3, you can donate monthly or even just once to our PayPal patronage.
Every little bit helps, and we are so grateful to those of you who have donated already. Thank you.
You help make this podcast possible.
Thanks, y'all.
You can go to our website, www.thisspiritualfix.com, for information on how to pledge as well as to email us. Hello, TSF family, and welcome to episode 16 of season 6 of This Spiritual Fix. Yes, we are back with an update on the primal wounds and where we have been for the last 2 to 3 months. Enjoy.
Hypnosis. Mindfulness. Meditation.
Mama, mama, mama.
Past life regression.
Mommy,
RTT.
This spiritual fix. Two mystical mamas hacking the self-help game.
With Anna Stromquist
and Christina Wiltsey.
Hello, Anna.
Hello, Christina.
Here we are.
Here we are.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's been a minute. As they say here in the South, it's been a minute.
It's been a minute. It has been a minute, indeed. It's been a lot. A lot has happened in the time that we've been away, hasn't it?
Yeah. Let me look real quick. The last time that we posted an episode was April 9th. Is that right?
I think it was April 9th. Yeah. Because that's when I posted to our Facebook page. In case anybody's not there, we have a Facebook group, and that's where we kind of let people know that we were taking a hiatus, and recently that we were not. So, yeah.
Yeah. So we took a 3-month hiatus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So welcome back, listeners. We took an unintentional that became an intentional break, I think.
I think so. I think there was a lot of unintentional stuff that happened. And then I feel like for me, in the end, I feel very rejuvenated as a result of it. Like, I didn't realize how kind of it was getting to me. It was taxing for me, like just the editing and all that kind of stuff every single week. I was like, man, we've been doing this every week. Or in a bundle for 3 years, right? We just came to 3 years in January.
Okay, well, this round, when we addressed the primal wounds, is really interesting because I think I went into them kind of arrogantly, like, oh, we did all the work last year and I can't be touched by the primal wounds. And, you know, oh, I've been there, done that. I've worked on the primal wounds. I'm good. This is smooth sailing. And then Christine and I got into a huge argument. And I don't want to go into the details of what we argued about because, one, it's a very personal thing. Two, it's not really anyone else's business. And three, if we're vague about it, you might be able to relate to it even more because we all have arguments and falling outs with friends and relatives. And the details aren't important. What's important is the feelings, like the wounds they trigger, the feelings mm-hmm. that come up, and how you resolve them. So we're not going to talk about what we argued about, but we can say that we were low contact for a while with each other. We were no contact.
Yep.
And then we both valued the relationship enough that we actually hired a mediator
mm-hmm.
to help us communicate with each other in a way that didn't send the other person spiraling. We'll go into the things we learned from that. But while we were taking that break, I think we both realized how much time and energy we put into the podcast. And we also just needed a break. And then you lived in Italy for a whole month with your family.
I did.
And in that time. And you want to talk about that first? And then we'll go back to the argument situation? Or what do you want to talk about?
Yeah, no, I can go into that. It's interesting because somebody said to me, somebody who's known me for a very long time said to me just before I went to Italy that they were impressed that I set my mind to something and then I like do it in a way that that maybe a lot of other people don't. Like a lot of people have like pipe dreams about, oh, I want to go live in a foreign country for a while, and they don't necessarily have the means or the privilege or the gumption to kind of just be like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Like, I don't know how this is going to work, but this is going to happen. And so for me, it was a really interesting span. And so if any of you guys listen to Human Design, I obviously enjoy Human Design, and I knew I had this idea that I wanted to go to Italy. Or no, excuse me. I just wanted to go somewhere to be able to have global schooling for my kids and to be able to kind of like fulfill this dream that I have of like, hey, I can work almost entirely remotely when I work with my clients. And why can't I try and do something about that and like actually go and live in another place? Originally, the idea was it would be like a form of geo-arbitrage, right? Where I would like go to a space that was cheaper to live. Turns out I did that, even though you would not expect it at all because I ended up in Europe, but it was so much cheaper to live in Europe than it is in America. Like literally the groceries at the Aldi's that are in Italy that I went to, or that the other whatever, like we would get a week's worth of groceries for like 80 to 100 euro. Like it was insane. Yeah, like I shit you not, like 80 to 100 euro. Like it
and
was.
And you were eating out more too, or not?
We were eating out more, but it wasn't. I mean, like you could get a pizza down the road for 5 euro. Like it was just like, it was, you know, I can't get a pizza at my little crappy, like gourmet pizza place down the road from me less than $23. Like it was just, I'm not going to go on about it, but I was like shocked at how cheap it was. Anyway, when I mentioned Human Design, I was like, okay, I know I want to do this thing, but I have to have something to respond to. Like, I can't just pick a random place. I need to respond to the universe and how it's kind of pulling into my life. So I tried real hard to like make that happen. A friend of mine was like, I'm going to live in Costa Rica. And I was like, we'll go there. You know, like basically waiting for something to respond to like, oh, we'll come stay with you. You know, and it wasn't that we needed company. It was just that there's so many places you can go. Why choose? And so it was finally a friend, and she's a good friend of both Anna and I actually. And she was like, I'm going to go stay in Italy in this place that I used to live for, you know, 16 years or whatever. And I was like, and I don't even know if I asked if I could come, or she said, can I come? Or, you know, or she was like, do you want to come? But it just like, it just fell right in my lap just as a generator where it was something that I could respond to. And then all of a sudden we were there and we were going, and we found this amazing place that was on the beach. We stayed in a beach town on the Adriatic. It was all like relatively affordable. And, you know, it doesn't mean it wasn't a pinch. It doesn't mean that it wasn't hard, but it was like so amazing. My kids had both been to England before, but my husband had never been outside the country besides to go to Canada. And like the amount of adaptation that my family did was absolutely incredible. Like even if it was just, hey, this is how you navigate the train system. Like this is like, you're going to have to jump off of a train, and then you're going to have to go find the platform, and then the platform could change. And like, how are we being efficient and making sure that all our stuff is in the same place, and like walking to all the different Airbnbs and like all of these different experiences. I was just so amazed at how adaptable and amazing and flexible and how much resilience my family gained in that time period, or maybe already had. But I was just like, I would never have changed the situation. It was incredible.
What is Luke's feeling about traveling abroad after this experience?
I think that there's a part of him that did what I used to do, which was kind of have physical ailments, even if you don't know how emotionally you feel. Like he had a couple of physical things that happened. Like he has a back problem, and he kind of, his back really started acting up. Of course, we were lugging around a lot of luggage down train platforms and stuff like that. And he got sick. But I think I keep asking him how he feels about it, and he keeps being like, it's really, really hard to get an opinion out of my husband. It's so hard to get an opinion out of him because I think on the one hand, he recognizes the benefit of it and he sees a lot of the good things. And I think at the same time, he's also a very grounded nature person, and we live out in the middle of nowhere, and it's conducive to that. So I can't really answer that question. I know that halfway through, I was getting homesick, which I didn't actually think would happen. But then 3 weeks through, my daughter started getting a little bit homesick. And then by the time that we left, there was like, we went to Rome at the end and there was like kind of this big, huge whirlwind, but we were all definitely ready to come home. But there was a couple of things we would shift. One thing is like, we're not in the fucking ever going to come back in the middle of Georgia in July when we've been in a really beautiful, like not too hot environment. Like it's been on the coast, like totally breezy, like actually cold, like actually having to wear sweaters in June in this place we were in Italy. And then coming back to the heat dome that we came back to, which was, you know what, it was like, it felt like 110 and it hadn't fucking rained in like 4 weeks. Like that was, I literally felt like I landed on the surface of Mercury, like the sun facing surface of Mercury. I was like, I didn't feel like I even came to the right place. It was so weird. Anyway, so there's a couple of learnings, but I think that, you know, my daughter is like, no, I don't want to travel again. And my son is like, give me more travel. And honestly, the entire trip was made successful because our friends' kids were there. So like, I think that the kids would have gotten bored out of their minds, but they got to be in very close proximity to friends and they got to go to the beach with them every day, or not every day, but like a lot of the days. Go to water parks. We went to like out to dinner in these crazy small Italian towns. And I think that that contributed so much to my kids really being on board. So it kind of like indicates to me too, that like my daughter is a very like her dad. Her dad is in NLP. If you guys remember our NLP episodes, my husband is a mismatch, right? He always figures out what he doesn't like how things are different as opposed to how they're similar. And my daughter is the same way. Like she's very contrarian and kind of mismatch in that way, in the sense that she would automatically say like, oh my God, I would never do it again. But then if we like more time passes and she gets used to it, then I think that she might be up for it, especially if the friends are there.
So I totally inaccurately predicted my kids' outcomes with camp, overnight
yes.
camp.
Tell me about it.
So leading up to overnight camp, they both went for 2 weeks. My son was gung-ho. He was all on board. And my older child was not. And I had to do a lot of convincing. I invested a lot of emotional energy and having them make friends who were also going to go to camp at this time. I invested so much time and energy just so they would be willing to go voluntarily. And I was worried sick the first few days. And then I get letters from camp. My older kid is like, I can't wait to come back next year. I wanted to go for a month next year. And came back with all these amazing memories and friends. And my son comes back and he's like, I don't ever want to go again. I hate it. I missed you too much. So I totally did not see it coming. I never worried about him. But that was a very interesting experience to not have children in the home for almost 2 weeks. I've not been quote unquote child free since they were born. For 11 years. So except for when I went out of town and when I did a Vipassana retreat, but in those situations, like, I don't know, it was a little different because I was leaving versus having them leave. It was a totally different experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And things change. My son may want to go back next year. So we don't know.
But what did you get up to in the time that you were by yourself?
Well, it was interesting because I love to cook, as you know, but my husband was doing a 5-day fast. He does intermittent fasts for 5 days a few times a year. So I didn't have anyone to cook for 5 of those days. And then we visited the lake. We spent a day with friends in Highlands, North Carolina. We had another couple whose daughter was also going to camp with my kid. Come up for a weekend and visit us. And so we just did like adult things without kids. It was weird. And then we joked that like, instead of talking about our kids 98% of the time, we only talked about them 50% of the time. And that was really weird.
That's hilarious. Yes.
Yeah. I think I caught up on rest and adult conversations and realizing like outside of the logistics of rearing children together, I really do love my husband. I know that's a weird thing to say, but sometimes in the busy day-to-day life shuffle, I'm like, do I really love this guy? Or are we just like, we're just like in this situation together and we're just wing, you know, we're just kind of yes. going with the flow. But then when the kids weren't around, I'm like, no, this is the guy that I like.
Yeah. It's yeah. I completely agree. And I feel like that's why it's like so crucial that like parents get out and actually like whenever I go on an anniversary trip with Luke, I am just so reminded of how compatible we are. Because we both just like spend all day at coffee spots and read and do whatever we want, right? It's just like, we don't need to like go, I mean, we might go for a hike or we might go something like that, but we're just so incredibly compatible. And I just love the conversations that we get into. And I just like, it always, I have to have it frequently enough, at least once a year, but hopefully more frequently to like remember how much I just love him when it's just him and he's not having to be parenting and I'm not either.
Yeah, it was just nice to know, to connect as people and not as parents.
Yes.
But of course, we did talk about our kids 50% of the time.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to happen, right? It's a huge part of life. And for us, like we're in the middle of reassessing our kids' app time and like screen time. Do you still have your kind of, I know this is kind of a controversial topic to just like randomly bring up, but like, do you still like have unlimited kid, like your kids can just do whatever they want with their screens because they like can regulate themselves?
Yeah. So we regulated screen time a lot, I think up until they were three or four. I have a list on the fridge of things they need to do every day. So it has like two chores, reading for 25 minutes, summer bridge, and then a foreign language for 25 minutes. And as long as they get that done, I don't care how much app time they get. Oh, and they also have to exercise once or twice a day, but that's not on the board because that's just a given that they're going to do that with me. And aside that from that, they have free reign of their apps and TV and whatever. However, the irony of it all is they're like never on their apps or their iPads or their movies, whatever, until like after dinner, we all watch a family movie. Like my oldest child, we're on vacation right now in the mountains. When we were packing, they both chose not to bring their devices.
Wow. And
yeah. Like they don't seek them out. And then like they have total freedom to watch Netflix, Hulu, whatever in the daytime. And they're reading books or playing with cards or Legos or drawing or journaling. Like they don't seek it out. One, I think because I'm not so strict about it that it's not forbidden. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah, it's not like a forbidden fruit sort of thing.
Yeah. I don't know if it's that or if it's also because that's just not their personalities. But like also at camp was completely analog, not digital at all. So they spent close to 2 weeks. If they wanted to write a letter, they had to write it by hand and then the camp would scan it and email it to me. And so they went like 2 weeks without any technology at all. And they loved it. My oldest child wants to go back for a whole month next year, which means that this kid will go 1/12 of the year without any technology.
Yeah.
So, my kids aren't technology heavy kids. And I don't know if it's because I don't regulate screen time or if it's just, or if I don't regulate screen time because I trust them because they're not like, they're not addicted. Like we've always had a rule, like you can't watch TV or play any device when you're eating. Like that's just a very, very, very strict rule in our house because I think you should always eat mindfully. I don't think you should ever mindlessly eat. That's right. Been my only one. But otherwise, like we're very kind of chill about it. I don't know. What about you?
Well, we're kind of reassessing a couple of them. It's been an interesting thing. Like 2 months ago, a month ago, my kids did something that they lost all privileges. And they had a whole day in which they were supposed to be completely screen free, no TV, no nothing. And at the end of the day, they were like, this is the best day ever. Like they literally were like, this is the best day ever, because it's like, given the temptation, they were like, you know, so, but then when we got back, I got COVID really badly when I got back from Italy and I've been like recovering ever since. And it got to the point where my daughter was like, I want to be sick because I just want to be able to watch screen all day or whatever like that. And I was like, and she managed to give herself a migraine at one point. I don't think she actually got COVID, but like, so we're in the process of kind of reassessing what our life looks like. We like had some really good epiphanies and we're still kind of developing what that looks like. But at the moment, I definitely have kids who are like me, who could just sit in front of a screen all day and actually not have any terrible repercussions, right? Whereas like, I think my daughter's a little bit like my husband. My husband cannot sit, like he doesn't watch movies. He doesn't watch TV. He barely watches his device. He's very like averse to screens in general. And so my daughter has a mixture of the both where she wants to do it, but she can't. Needless to say, we are in the middle of reassessing. So I wanted to ask you about it because, you know, I feel like there's so much gained from, the idea that like there's that forbidden thing and all of that. In Italy, because there was always something to do and we weren't in the middle of nowhere, like we are here, right? And like right now it's so hot. It's like I literally just never want to go outside. It feels like winter in the north to me right now. Like we haven't even have a pool. And I'm just like, the water is 96 degrees right now. Like it's actually 96 degrees right now, like in the pool. Like it's a freaking, it may as well be a hot tub or a warm bath. Like it's not refreshing. And so it's really hard because, you know, you kind of just want to do that instead of being outside. And in Italy, they were at the beach every day and it was so cool and it was so wonderful that the tendency to want to go outside was just that much better. And so we're going to try and relive that and kind of capture that again in this time period once everybody's back to their full health.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the solution is. I think if anyone's listening and is a parent, it's maybe like a kid to kid basis of what is right for your family. But
yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So do you want to kind of go into the mediation talk about the things that you learned? I learned something really key. I know you learned something really key. It was a really fascinating experience in general.
We had three sessions. I have little notes from our mediation session here, and we both spoke, you know, privately with him. His name's Paul Lewis, and I'll put a link to his website on the podcast. If you ever need a mediator, I really recommend him. We both spoke to him in private. We shared like what our issues were, what we wanted out of the relationship, what we wanted from the other person. And then I think he just basically, he's like, no bullshit. And he's like, well, you need to let go of this, Anna. You need to let go of that. You need to do this. You need to do that. Nicely and lovingly, like a parent, you know, kind of just like calling you out on some stuff. And anyways, what we did is like the first two sessions was basically, they went so fucking slow.
Oh my
like,
God. So slowly.
Christina and I are both very fast processors. We process information fast. We learn our spiritual lessons in quotes fast. Like we're used to going fast. And he was like taking turns holding both our hands, navigating the issue. And it was going so fucking slow. And then like anytime we talked about anything, he was like, stop, take a breath, meditate, get in your body and breathe, and then say a sentence. And so like we literally moved at the slowest snail pace ever in the first two sessions. And I'm like, this is never gonna fucking work. Like, what the fuck? This is too slow. But what he was doing, which was genius, is he was retraining Christina and I that when we got triggered by our primal wounds, as represented by each other in this scenario, like I represented to you, what, rejection, betrayal, injustice, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Me represented abandonment and betrayal and you know, probably injustice too. And then like, it was such a slow fucking process, but it taught me to recognize when I was starting to get out of balance in a conversation, because your tendency when you're out of balance is to escape and flee the conversation or shut down the conversation. And my tendency is to attack. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, not funny. It's a lifelong pattern of mine is that when I get really dysregulated or argumentative, my nervous system goes into fight. So I will like attack. I will just say that thing that you should never say. But the point is, It was like painstakingly slow, but I think it helped us both untrain that habit pattern of staying in a triggered, dysregulated state during an argument. I mean, I don't know. What do you think about those first two sessions?
Yeah. So the first two sessions for me, the first one, I had a break and the kids were gone and Luke was gone. So I had no distractions for like an hour and a half beforehand. And I'd already been in places where, you know, I'm sure people who, especially who have like some level of CPTSD, get into that. And even if you don't, like, we'll get into that space where you like start an argument in your head with a person and then you just like run that argument over and over and over again in your head. And it just feels like it's almost like it just feels like a pit of despair. Like you can't get out of it. And you're constantly like getting dopamine hits from this argument inside your head because you're showing up in that argument in your head completely unlike you would in real life. Like for me, I'm like standing up for myself and I'm not escaping and I'm like all these things and I'm saying all these things. And so I had worked myself up for months like that. And so by the time that I got to that first one and I had like an hour and a half where I wasn't seeing clients and I was just waiting, I got myself into the worst, like triggered flashback state. I was in complete freeze. Like I was like my whole body, I could barely breathe. I was like, my chest was tight. It totally reminded me of all the experiences that I had had, like anytime I'd had a mediation with my stepmother when I was younger. And like, it was just it was like debilitating. So I barely showed up to that first call because I was just like, I'm fine. Like I was literally, as much as you could mask a face, that was what I was trying to do. And Paul kept being like, I think that you need to just take a deep breath and relax. And I was like, I'm okay. Right? Like I was just like, it was so, so bad. And so I also was like, had never worked with him before. So I didn't know if I could trust, like in some of my worst parts, like he ganged up with Anna against me. And I was like sitting there, you know, like it was like, I had so many like nightmarish views of this because I've had experiences like that in actual reality where like the mediator starts to get with the person who's like, it's happened at least twice, right? Where I've been in a mediation situation and the mediator was more familiar with the other person than they were with me. And right. I basically lost that. Their unbiased nature. And he's not like that at all.
He's not like that. And that was my main issue with him because I do know him longer than you because he's my husband's best friend. And I was like, you're not going to pick sides. And yeah, he was very objectively good. But yeah. Yes. So how was it going through the first two sessions and just being like baby stepping it?
I mean, it was good in the first one, because if we hadn't baby stepped it, I would have been completely distrustful of the process, because I don't know if I ever would have gotten out of that PTSD. So my huge breakthrough happened because I was like, oh my God, this is taking forever. If I have to get into this state, if I'm going to get into this state before every single one of these fucking things, and if we're doing like 10 of them, like I'm going to die. Like I can't be stuck in this position, in this place for all of these things. Like if we can't even get to the heart of whatever it is, which of course we were, but to your point, like I couldn't really see it. If we can't even get to the heart where we like not even close on the first one, like I'm going to be in this for the long haul. I have to figure out this feeling. And that's when my major breakthrough happened for me, was that the second one was coming up and I could start to feel that same feeling of holy shit, I can feel this feeling and this feeling is terrifying. And then I just started to be like, what happens if it's just the feeling itself that I'm afraid of and I don't actually have any fear of the actual mediation at all? Like I have no evidence to provide that says that this is going to go sideways, right? Like I can catastrophize, but like, so I started this practice, which I now do to this day, which I was being introduced to in a lot of different things, but this practice is just like the counter to fear is curiosity and excitement. And so if I'm afraid of a feeling, my job to counter it is to be curious about it and excited about it. Right. So I literally did that on the second one. I was like, oh my God, I can't breathe. This is amazing. Let me go explore that. It was just like, I went so wholly into just like immersing myself in the experience, almost as if I was bathing in these beautiful dark waters. And by the time that I got to the session, I was like, I'm good. I'm great. And that allowed me to come to the session with a completely different viewpoint, to the point where by the end of it, you and I could have like an offline conversation and be like,
yeah, we need to speed it up. So the third session, we told them, we're like, we're ready to speed it up. And then we sped it up and we came to some great agreements that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
And I guess my biggest insight, I don't think I had such a deep insight as you. I wish I had. But my biggest insight was that you and Eric and an ex-boyfriend were all correct in telling me that I am really mean when I'm dysregulated. Like I couldn't comprehend a world in where I would be upset and not lash out. Like I just couldn't even believe that people could be like that. Like I thought that the people who weren't like that were cowards. Like that people who didn't lash out at other people when they were upset were either cowards or lying. Okay. Like I really saw the nobility in being cruel or honest, even if it was a cruel honesty, right? Like I valued fight over other neuro responses, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I was like shocked to see that I not only was that not the only option, but it wasn't the best option, right?
Yeah.
That was my insight. It's like, it's not the only option and it's not the best option. And then like, I'll give you an example. Like immediately after, I think our first or second session, I was in the carpool line. So in the carpool line, there's all these cars lined up behind you. And like, you basically have like a short window where the teacher opens the car door and the kids are supposed to jump out with their stuff so the teacher can close the door so you can move out of the way for the next car. So anyways, we're in the carpool line and my child has literally the whole time that we're waiting to tie their shoe or unbuckle their seat belt or put their backpack on, whatever it was. But like I always say, like, okay, guys, get ready, because when the teacher comes, you have to open the door and like roll out. And whatever it was, my child decided to wait until the moment that we were like, the teacher was opening the door to do whatever was this task that could have been done outside of the car and was so time consuming and inconsiderate to everyone behind them. And I yelled and I'm like, oldest child, get your, like, I don't know what I said, but I was like, get your backpack and go. Like I said something, whatever I did, I barked it. It was like, my tone was horrible. I barked it. It was just like nasty. In my mind, it was my way of being urgent, but it came out really bad. And like, as soon as it happened, I regretted it. And I felt bad all day. When they got home from school, I was like, I really want to apologize for the tone of voice I used when you were getting out of the car today. I hope, like, I had imagined it ruined their whole day. And they're like, oh yeah, no big deal, mom. Like it didn't faze them. But what I learned in like that whole day, because it was during this mediation stuff too, was like, was it worth it? Like making the cars behind me wait an additional 2 minutes for my kid, was that worth the cost of me barking at her, of me feeling like a crappy mom all day? Like if I weigh like the pros and cons of what I would have gotten out of it, it was totally not worth it. And then I started to realize, like, when I get mad at people and I bark at them or I attack them, is it worth it? And I'm like, it's not worth it. I don't know how to explain this epiphany, but I was like, it was totally not worth it to bark at her. And so I haven't barked at her since, thank God. But like, it was just a huge eye-opening moment that like, in a moment of dysregulation, barking was not my only choice and it wasn't the best choice. I could have just been like, you know what? Fuck it. The cars behind me can wait in another minute. And I can just calmly tell her, hey, in the future, we need to tie your shoes before we get to the carpool drop-off point or whatever it was. But like, I could have taught her in a more meaningful way that didn't make me feel like shit all day. Anyways, so that was my biggest takeaway, I think.
Yeah. You also, there was something at the time, and I'm curious about this, because at the time, there was the idea that if you wait, if you give yourself the beats to be able to because it's hard for you to not immediately want to do something, right? Like right. there's a need to like, have you kind of incorporated that? Because at the time that was like the big thing right. for you was waiting and like waiting till you're regulated again.
Right. Like when I get really dysregulated, there's a sense of like, it's funny. They call it in a heart attack signs and symptoms of a heart attack. One is an impending sense of doom. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I'll get this impending sense of doom and like, I have to say what I need to say. And like, I feel like the friendship will absolutely end or the relationship is absolutely doomed if I don't say what I need to say right in this moment. And like one of the big takeaways with Paul through you was when I feel that way, that's exactly when I need to step back and regulate and get calm. Like nothing, quote unquote, nothing good really comes of me trying to express myself when I'm at that state.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a really hard thing. Cause it's, I think that's a similar, I feel like for me, that mind fuck that I get into, right. It's a similar feeling. And it feels like, and I know where mine comes from. I'm curious if yours may be coming from a similar place. Is that like, you know, when you were younger, did you have the ability to always express however you felt to like until you were empty? Or did it feel like it was very controlled or you couldn't even do it at all?
No, I was allowed to self-express with my father. I wasn't allowed to express emotion so much with my mom unless my dad was present. My mom had like a very short fuse.
Yeah.
And low tolerance to childish emotions, I should say. But I did get that with my dad. I remember lying on the floor crying for like what felt like hours because my boiled egg wasn't boiling fast enough as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, the fact that you're, like you said, your mom had a short fuse, that was an experience.
Might have been my modeling. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That could have been it.
And that's a similar thing with me. Like for me, the reason I go into my head was because that was the only safe place that I could actually express how I actually felt about a situation, right? Like I never had a safe space in an argument. It was so dangerous for me to actually like say how I felt about a situation that I had to internalize it. I completely had to have the argument inside my head. And so that had to be good enough forever, right? It had to be good enough to be able to have the fight inside of my head. And then I just had to somehow release the energy, right? Like I just had to somehow find a way, you know, which is why in so many ways, like when I'm then faced with somebody who I'm supposed to then say how I feel, I'm so afraid because that's how it always was, right? That's why I even created the internal system, right? And so it all makes sense. It's just a matter of how do we then allow ourselves to remedy that? And it's a really, I mean, like, what's your opinion? Given everything that you've just said, I'm really interested. Like, you know, do you feel that the energy that you have in anger towards another person can actually be dissipated by not expressing it as anger towards that person?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you feel like is your method for doing that? Like, what do you feel like is a better alternative?
Physical exercise for me. When we interviewed Matt Kahn, he gave you and I kind of like a private reading after the interview. And he told me, remember, he said, you're a husky. And when you're upset, you need to run. You need to like run, you know, be a dog on a dog sled, pulling a sled. You need to like burn it off energetically. And he's right. So for me, I just have to like work out really hard, go for a run, go for a jog, just sweat. I have to get that energy out in another way. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard thing. Cause I think that a lot of people, especially if they have estranged parents or if they have people who they feel like they can't talk to, a lot of the time we feel as if maybe the only way to resolve something is to let them know how you feel. And then we start to recognize that ultimately how we feel and how they feel and how we hope that they're going to react to our insight about how we feel, especially if they're not emotionally regulated or mature themselves, is never what we expect. Right. Like, so, you know, I could have said anything to you expecting a certain outcome from saying it that way, and recognize that 9 times out of 10, everybody's in their own space. They're having their own, all their old past stuff is coming up, and we can't possibly expect that they are going to react in the way that we want them to. That's going to actually be the just perfect bullseye that's going to make us feel better.
Right.
Because it's like ultimately up to us.
And it's interesting because, like, my husband and I, we were in a situation with someone who runs a lot of injustice wound victim mentality. And me and this person were having a conversation. And when it was over, my husband's like, you really held back. Like, you really held back. Why didn't you point out X, Y, and Z to them? Because I pointed out like one thing. Why did you hold back? And you only said like this little tiny thing when there's so much more you could have said to help them. And I was like, because it's going to fall on deaf ears. Like, this person runs victim mentality. Anything I say is not going to change them. And it's, if anything, it's just going to piss them off. And I feel like so many times in my life, I've said what I needed to say for me, but like the other person can't digest it or take it or hear it. And it just does no good. And I just knew that like, there's nothing I could do to help this person see that their perspective on this certain issue was very warped. And, you know, and my husband's like, well, maybe telling them the truth, the quote unquote truth, in quotes, my truth, my husband's truth, my truth, would help this guy see, quote unquote, the truth. But I'm like, he'll see the truth when he's ready to see the truth. Like, it's not my job. It's not worth a bit.
And it's not. And I, there is literally no ears when you're dysregulated. They do not exist. And no matter what your stress response cycle is, I don't think that there is ears. And I do not think that that information is going, if it's going in your ears, it's going straight into your reptilian brain, right? It's going straight into your limbic system. There is not a single part of it that is actually able to go into the prefrontal cortex. And even if it feels like it's helpful, like even if you're the type of person who maybe like I do that, like when somebody says something to me in an argument, I always take it so personally. And I'm like, oh my God, they're right. And I'm such an awful person. And I go into this super, for a while I did, I don't do it as much anymore, but I go into this, like oftentimes go into this very self-critical space, right? If I'm not getting defensive, then I'm getting offensive against myself. And that's still the limbic system. That's literally still the reptilian brain trying to take a piece of information and weaponize it either against yourself or against the other person, right? But it's not going anywhere useful. So yeah, it's
I agree. Okay, well, Christina, do you have anything to add about the mediation? Because if not, I wanted to go over our agreements for future arguments.
Yeah, that's great. Good. Okay. We're good. Yeah. Sorry. I like, y'all heard me cough for a second. I'm still getting over COVID. So go ahead.
Okay. So I'm going to, if you remember, we had an episode called How to Survive a Pandemic Without Murdering Your Partner.
Yes.
And we gave like agreements, argument agreements to have with your partner. Well, Christina and I, through this mediation process with Paul, came up with specific ways that her and I need to argue in the future. Because by the third session, we were both just like, Or at least I know I was. I'm pretty sure she was. I was like, I'm just fucking done. I don't want to nitpick over all the reasons why I'm right and she's wrong. And then she'll be saying why she's right and I'm wrong. And ultimately, like, I don't even fucking care at this point. It's not worth it. Right. And we were both just like, we're just fucking over it. We were both like, what do we do to prevent this in the future? Because we can't change the past. We can't change the past 3 months where we were low contact with each other. Right. Okay. So this is what we decided. In the future, when one of us is dysregulated, we need to recognize it and just say, hey, I need to step away. And then the person who makes that announcement, like, hey, I need to step away, I'm dysregulated, they also get to call the shots of when we discuss it again. So for example, if let's say Christy and I are getting into a conversation and she feels dysregulated and she says, hey, I need a break from this conversation. I should not, you know, hound her. Hey, when are we going to talk? Hey, are you ready to talk? Hey, well, can we talk about this? The ball's now in Christina's court because she called the pause to decide when we discuss again.
Yep. And That's right. And also, but also be communicative in the sense of just like, because a lot of the time when you're on a space and someone's like, I can't deal with this, the other person's just like hanging around being like, is this ever going to be? So like the person's kind of, the other person's in charge of just being like, hey, I'm still processing. Okay. It's going to be a couple more days. Like, right. To basically to time box it in the sense of like, they're being communicative about not abandoning the other person because they're dysregulated and they just can't be bothered to kind of get to it or to deal with whatever that is. So, yeah.
Right. And then the follow-up conversation needs to happen on the phone or in person and not in text because too much is lost.
Yes.
And that kind of communication. And then ultimately we want to replace defensiveness with curiosity. Like, how can I do better? How did I hurt you? How in the future could I do it differently? Help me understand why I did was hurtful. You know, like try to be more curious than how dare you think I'm capable of that? You know, like, you know, sometimes when we hurt people, we immediately think, how could they possibly think I would be such an asshole? And then we go into that story instead of realizing like this other person's hurt. So replacing defensiveness with curiosity. And then we decided to come up with a code word because I said, look, when I'm dysregulated, I might say something sarcastic or nasty. So we decided that we have a code word, which is koala, which is because Paul Lewis is from Australia. Yes. And koalas are very sweet and cute and cuddly, but I heard they can also be very vicious. Is this true?
It is true.
So the code word is koala, which is to say, I really love you and I really value this relationship and I value it so much that I need to step away because I'm not in a good place or I might become nasty. Can we please just take a pause? And so koala is supposed to like encompass all the good stuff and the warning. That's our code word because I just know when I'm dysregulated, I can't guarantee that I will always be, I know I won't be sane to be kind. And then I also just want to say that there's hope for like really bad arguments with people. Like I know of so many, I've had one friendship divorce. Like I have one friend that I basically am divorced from. We had a major falling out. And in retrospect, I realized like if we had gotten a mediator, and I think that we both loved each other enough and cared about each other enough that we should have and could have, but it just wasn't like on our radar that that's a possibility. And that friendship is over. And then I have a friend who had a big falling out with another friend, like a lifelong friend. And I told her about what happened with me and Christina. And she was like, oh gosh, you guys love each other enough to hire a mediator? She didn't do it with her friend. But maybe the wheels in her head are turning and she's like, you know, is this friendship worth repairing with professional help or not? Anyways, divorces don't just happen with husbands or wives. Like they can happen with friends. And I think just like you would go to a marriage counselor, if your marriage is starting to fail, there's no shame in going to a mediator if your friendship is starting to fail, if that makes sense. So anyway, so that's just kind of part of our little summary of why we've been MIA. And then Christina, could you, what else is going on with you?
I am coming up on a year of having worked for myself and not working for a big old corporation in 2 days. It's been a year.
Oh my gosh, that went fast.
I know I did. It went really fast. It may have been facilitated by the fact that we didn't talk to each other for 3 to 4 months in that time period, but something like that. But I just wanted to kind of drop a couple of things that are going on in case anybody is interested. One is that I forget if everybody remembers Hannah from Bridge to Connection. She was she talks to animal spirits. She is running, and it's actually very soon. So if you're interested, it's kind of a drop in, drop out. But she's doing this really lovely journey with nature spirits thing that I'm hosting one of them, but the rest of them are being hosted by her and this other wonderful woman, and they are all about like connecting with the spirit of gnome and dragon and fae and things like that. So it's kind of a fun thing. So if you're interested, it's www.bridgetoconnection.com. And that would be a really cool thing. And also, I am going back to Italy in October for a retreat that I am super excited about, because it's in this tiny little town that only has like 300 people in it. And so the retreat will literally be like possibly change the people in the retreat, even if there's only like going to be up to 12 people, is going to actually change like the population of the town. So it's basically like having an entire Italian cobblestone, beautiful town. And the whole retreat is about tuning into, not just tuning into the energetics of a place, which there are a lot there. There's like a haunted castle. There's like all sorts of like very, very interesting energies in this place. But it's also about like, how can you go to all these different places and kind of choose and what I say, kind of build an invincible energy field, right? Where you can go anywhere and do anything. And it includes things like energetic jet lag. Like if you've ever gone to a space, like I had it when I first went to Italy. The last time I left Italy was in 2003. And I left when I just come from like a 3-month summer. I was studying abroad in Italy in 2003. And by the time I got to the end, I couldn't eat or drink anything. Like the environment was making me so sick that I just had to leave. I just fasted for like the last 3 days I was there, which is like a really weird thing. Little did I know that when I came back, picked up right where I left off, and all this past life stuff came up, and it was really fascinating because it helped facilitate the kind of curriculum that's going to be at the retreat, which is all about like, you land a new place, it's a totally different energy. What past life stuff is coming on? How can you like facilitate the karmic lessons of you being in a different place, being with different people, and make it so that it's a lot easier and smoother? So those are two things that are going on. And if you're interested in mine, you can go to KristinaWiltse.com, which is KristinaWiltse.com, if you want to learn more information.
When is it?
It's October 6th through 12th of this year.
Okay. Very cool.
Yeah. I'm really looking forward to it. It's filling up. So it's like definitely one of those things where it is good to go in there and do that as soon as possible. Yeah.
Let's put a link to that information in the show notes for the retreat and for the fairy thing. That awesome. Sounds really cool.
Yeah. So it's good.
All right.
Thanks, y'all. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this episode of TSF, The Spiritual Fix. If you don't follow us on Instagram, you can follow us at this.spiritual.fix. Thanks, y'all.
Hello, TSF family. I wanted to offer an exclusive invitation to listeners of the podcast for a retreat that I am hosting in Italy, in Labro, an hour outside of Rome, on enterogetics. Enterogetics allows us to pull into our body and understand how to create a bulletproof energy field. It's one of the many things that I practice with my clients, and I am so excited to be able to incorporate this very interesting energetic place of Labro with the exclusiveness of a completely restorative retreat that is filled with community, camaraderie, and most of all, connection with our most divine selves. I hope that you'll join me. If you come to www.KristinaWiltse.com, you can get more information or reach out at chris@chriswiltse.com. I hope to see you there. And if you book before August 15th, you'll get an exclusive early bird discount. Thanks, y'all.